You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickard. Coming up, Gemma Tarlak joins us for a look at some of the most intriguing stories from the world of science, including efforts to send spaceships to another solar system. Very, very tiny spaceships.
First, our next guest argues that Uncle Sam is the worst helicopter parent in America. She makes the case that a lot of government regulations are interfering in parental decision-making and stop people from raising their families as they see fit.
Abby Schachter joins us now. She's a regular contributor to publications like Acculturated, the Pittsburgh Tribune Review, and the Weekly Standard. And her new book is called No Child Left Alone, Getting the Government Out of Parenting. Abby, welcome to Central Time.
Thanks for having me. This is great.
Well, Abby, how did you become what you call a captain mommy?
Basically, it was because in my state, Pennsylvania, they have banned allowing caretakers to swaddle babies in daycare. And swaddling was my big cause. It's what helped our four children sleep when they were young. And the state came in and said, well, you can't do it. And I sort of, that was a bridge too far for me, and I suddenly turned into a captain mommy fighting for my rights as a parent.
Well, how different would you say the level of governmental involvement for parents today is than it was maybe 20 years ago?
I think the biggest problem we have today is that private decision-making is defined as a public problem and has to be decided by government. So I'd say 20 years ago, if you wanted to let your kid walk to the playground unsupervised or let them ride their bike around the neighborhood or walk to school, that would be your decision, yours and your child's, I suppose. And now it's much more the decision of police departments, school principals, crossing guards, and they get involved in telling parents what they can and can't do in terms of their child raising their own children.
And as we said, you refer to yourself as a captain mommy, and there are also captain daddies out there too. And you say these are parents who are advocating to stem the flow of governmental regulations that interfere with parenting. I mean, but is this a movement now? Is this something that's more than just you and a handful of other people who are concerned about this?
Well, I think I wish it would become more of a movement. I think there are definitely more and more people coming to the realization. It happens in small ways, right? So you have parents, for example, in Florida. What did they band together to fight for? Recess. They feel, and correctly, I think, that kids need time to run around during the school day. And in their school districts in Florida, they were getting no recess. I mean, some places it was down to like 5 minutes, and some schools there was none. And that's what got them energized and got them fighting for their rights. For some parents, it's play. For other parents, it's what they want to send their kids to eat at school. And for me, it was swaddling. So I think that it is individual parents, but as people realize there are other people like them, hopefully they'll take up the charge.
Wouldn't you say, though, that the government has a role in making childhood better? If you look at the pages of history, child labor laws passed in the progressive era, or compulsory primary education, isn't there a role there to be played?
Oh, absolutely. And as you say, the Supreme Court said exactly what you've just echoed, which is that parents have a right to parent their children with the exception of providing them an education. So certainly the government has a role. What I'm saying is if you look around at all the cases of parents arrested for private decisions that they made towards their child, letting them be alone, the government's decided we must breastfeed, school lunches are determined by Washington, D.C. and not by the local community. These are all areas in which decisions that used to be made on the spot by parents or by the local community have been just taken away and really made exacerbated and made one size fits all, which doesn't really fit many, many families.
Abby Schachter is with us now. She has a new book out. It's called No Child Left Alone, Getting the Government Out of Parenting. And Abby, you just mentioned an example saying the government says we must breastfeed. And obviously many parents choose to use formula instead of breastfeeding. So what is the case there that you're making?
Well, for example, if you look at the rules of Obamacare, everybody is now paying for free breast pumps for women to breastfeed, and employers are mandated to provide a space to breastfeed, that is, to pump breast milk, which is not a bathroom. And these are both areas. There are lots of city and state hospitals where formula has been put under lock and key and been taken away from being close at hand for new moms, because the ideology is, well, we've got to push mothers into the best choice that we think they can make, instead of leaving it up to women to decide for themselves.
Another area you look at is food and nutrition, and some of this overlaps with concerns about obesity for children as well. What do you see there that makes you worried?
It worries me a lot that there are children across the country that have been taken out of the custody of their parents because they're obese. Now, they are definitely suffering from a terrible health condition, and your heart breaks for these stories, but in most of these cases, the entire family is suffering from a health problem, and the state's decision is to say, well, we don't really care about you, adults, because we can only take legal custody of the child, so we're going to take them away. And what shocks me is the idea that you can rectify one harm by causing another. Do we not care about the emotional or psychological harm caused to children who are removed from the bosom of their family?
I want to talk about something that dovetails with this conversation. One of the things you talk about is the National School Lunch Program, as well as the First Lady's push for kids to be healthier, to be more active. And you say that some of these efforts, they're misguided and they have maybe unintended effects. What do you see there?
Well, I mean, one of the problems that I have is that the United States Department of Agriculture, which is the department of the government that administers the school lunch program, has really complicated competing interests, because it is also in charge of agriculture in the United States. So it is charged with competing tasks, because while it is trying to, let's say, feed nutritious lunches to millions of children, it's also trying to make sure that the dairy industry is doing well, that the cattle industry is doing well, that all of these agricultural industries are protected classes. And these things are competing with something that should be pretty simple, which is feeding children in school. And it's become such a complicated matter that there are school districts, when they can afford it, that have hired professional chefs to be able to manage the menu, that they now have to comply with the regulations.
So the regulations may be onerous, but on the other hand, the CDC has also said that the prevalence of obesity has dropped 43% among children between the age of 2 and 4 between the years of 2004 and 2012. So, I mean, I guess on the other hand, if these programs are working,
I would say I'd push back only insofar as saying, how about doing something a little bit simpler, like more activity? I think the First Lady was completely right on when her program was dealing with the question of exercise and motion and movement. She was totally correct. And, the image of her dancing with school children and involving them in activity, I thought was terrific. But when you move into, when you stray from something that's sort of common sense, get the kids up and moving, to, okay, now we're going to force feed them according to a diet that that really is mandated from one place in the country. So, for example, I spoke to a seventh grader the other day, and she was really upset because she can only get low-fat milk in her cafeteria. And she read the nutrition information, and she saw how much sugar there is in low-fat milk, and she's skinny as a rail. She needs the fat. So why can't she get whole milk or opt for whole milk instead of low-fat milk? No, because the USDA says there's only one type of milk. Or what if she's lactose intolerant? Why should she have to get milk on her tray in the first place?
We're talking right now with Abby Schachter. She is a Pittsburgh-based writer and the author of the new book called No Child Left Alone, Getting the Government Out of Parenting.
And you can join the conversation at 800-642-1234. Do you see what our guest is saying? Too much government regulation affecting how parents parent, how schools feed kids, daycares, things like that. Do you think there are health and safety regulations that are stopping people from raising their families as they see fit? Do you see positives and negatives? If you're a teacher, you work in childcare, I'd love to hear from you as well. And of course, parents. Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page.
And we'll continue our conversation in just a bit here on Central Time.
You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. We're talking to Abby Schachter. She's a Pittsburgh-based writer and the author of the new book, No Child Left Alone, Getting the Government Out of Parenting.
We want to hear your thoughts at 800-642-1234. Our guest says government health, safety, and hygiene regulations are interfering with choices that should be left up to parents. Do you see this happening in your home, in your school, in your child care, in your neighborhood? Call 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page.
And Abby, we've got a comment here from Matt in Wausau who says, where does your guest live that doesn't allow children to ride their bikes around or take a walk? It isn't happening in Wausau. Children aren't political commodities, as your guest suggests. Government isn't the inflated problem, she suggests, either. That's from Matt in Wausau who's saying that's not his reality.
Well, I'm really glad to hear that. And it is true. It's not to say that there aren't any children riding their bikes anywhere in America, but there are, as Lenore Skenazy, who mans the Free Range Kids blog and who wrote the foreword to my book, chronicles every day, there are stories from across the country of parents who have allowed their kids to go out unsupervised. And they get the police and child welfare after them constantly. There was a father in Connecticut who nearly got arrested because the police showed up when he took his teenage sons to a frozen river to just see nature. And these fire trucks and police cars showed up to berate him for doing something that was potentially dangerous for his children. There was a woman in Texas who wrote to Lenore basically to explain how her son, who had just been outside her door, was essentially was brought home by the police and then interviewed with without her being present by child welfare sometime later, all about their house, their family life, suggesting that there was something wrong with her decision to let him walk around his neighborhood by himself. So while I'm very glad to hear that in this gentleman's community he hasn't seen this problem, it is something that is happening in many, many other places in the United States.
But do you think the reason we've heard of, say, a case like the one you just told us about with the kids being, or the family being penalized for playing near the icy river, is because they are outliers and because most of the time, maybe the enforcement you're talking about isn't that extreme?
Well, my question is, why should there be any enforcement at all? In all of these cases, nothing has happened to the child. So I'm asking myself, why are the police and child welfare involved? Do they have nothing else to do? Is there no violence? Is there no crime? Is there no real abuse and neglect that child welfare services should be looking at? And this is part of the problem that I have, which is that if you look at all of the things that child welfare is supposed to be watching, their mandate has become so broad. Their definition of what is safe or what is abuse or what is neglect is so broad that it encompasses a whole range of very normal activity. And they then miss cases and they can't possibly keep up with all the work that they're generating for themselves.
Let's take a caller now. We've got Tiffany joining us in Kenosha. Tiffany, hi.
Hi.
What did you want to share?
I was thinking about like the diet that the schools are enforcing, and I think that a lot of that is targeted at kids who don't have that ability to get that nutrition at home. It's so that the school is providing the stuff that they can't get at home and that they need, and they're kind of filling that thing. So I don't think that it's fair to say that everybody in the community is, like, suffering because they're putting these rules out there for the diets when it's made to benefit the children.
Tiffany, thank you for that call. And what about that point, Abby? I mean, there are children who live in food scarce households. They eat snacks, they eat breakfast sometimes and lunches at school, and these are important fail-safes that the schools have, these nutrition programs, and people benefit.
Well, I totally agree with Tiffany, and she's highlighting actually a very interesting problem, which is she's basically said that the rule for the majority should be set by the exceptions, right? We understand that there's a minority of kids in many communities who are in less nutritious, are leading less nutritious lives, and we want to solve for that. That's a great impulse. The question is, how are you managing to do that? And are you essentially saying, well, because we have to set one bar, we're going to make it for the exception and not for the rule?
I mean, in Wisconsin, there are huge numbers of children. I believe it's over 50% that do get free and reduced school lunches. So I don't know, for at least in Wisconsin, if we're talking about a minority.
Well, I mean, if you take the overall, so what I would say is it would be great if the state of Wisconsin, or even more granular, the specific school districts could design food programs for themselves. Why can't the school districts be in charge of their own food service? Why does it have to be a national thing? Why is that better? Shouldn't the state of Wisconsin or the individual school districts, I mean, again, this is not rocket science. Feeding children is not rocket science, and parents have been doing it for centuries, right? It's one of the most basic things we do. So if we're now saying that the schools have to do it in place of parents, which is essentially what we are suggesting. There's so many kids who are deprived. We have to replace good nutrition in the schools. Fine, but bring the problem closer to home. Have the school districts themselves, or at least at the state level, decide what's more readily available, what's cheaper for them to provide. Why is it taken away from local communities and put in the hands of unaccountable bureaucrats? If Tiffany found that the school lunches at her school were inappropriate for her child, her recourse is really limited, because how is she going to get to the person in Washington who was responsible for designing the menu?
Abby Schachter is with us right now. She's a regular contributor to publications like Acculturated, Pittsburgh Times Review, and her new book is out. It's called No Child Left Alone, Getting the Government Out of Parenting. And we'll go next to Ken in Wisconsin Dells. Ken, hi.
Hi. My comment, after working for 20 years in education and dealing with a lot of parents, is I'm very thankful that the government is there to instruct parents and provide some guidelines, because I've seen too many times when parents simply are not up to the task. And I'm sorry, but no child has to drink the milk that's provided at school. No child has to eat the lunch that's at school. Parents are free to send a sack lunch with their children, any lunch that they want to. This question becomes, okay, if we want to take it what the school is providing, then that's what they get. And I see no problem at all with having it mandated what that lunch should be. It should be a healthy lunch.
Ken, thanks a lot for that comment. And Ken says he's thankful for those government guidelines, that there are a lot of families that need assistance figuring out the nutrition pieces of the puzzle.
That may be the case, and I'm glad that those the argument I'm making is not to say there shouldn't be school lunch, right? I'm advocating that that the way the government is doing it at the moment is too one-size-fits-all, and while Ken may feel that from his experience he thinks that the parents in his community couldn't be trusted to make a decent lunch, or they, or the school was making a better lunch for the children than the parents would have. There are other parents who would disagree. I spoke to a parent who felt that they were reporting a story about a girl whose lunch had been taken away from her and replaced with something that, in fact, wasn't, to the mother's taste, not healthier. There is a school in Chicago where the principal banned any parent from bringing their own packed, home-packed lunch with their child because the school said, well, we can't control what's in that lunch, and it might be junk, and so we don't want to allow any outside food in the school. So while I think that there, we have to understand that that as much as some examples may work, there are many, many parents, and this was really why I wrote the book. I wanted to find out, am I the only person who ran up against this problem? And what I found was that I really didn't know the half of it. There are a lot of parents who have run into these problems, and they really feel that there isn't much they can do.
And Abby, I want to ask you, as we start to wrap up here, what can parents do if they agree with you and they do want more control over raising their kids and some of these choices that the families can make?
Well, I think there are good examples across the country. I spoke to a dad in California who basically devoted his front lawn to a play space so that his kids and neighborhood kids would have a safe place to be outside and not in front of a TV screen, and that became his cause. There are parents, as I said before, who have gotten together and are really working with politicians in their school districts in Florida for more recess. I think that the biggest thing that parents can realize is that if they see a problem with something happening, or they feel that they have had a run-in with authorities,
and Abby, I'm so sorry, but we're out of time for that last statement. But we appreciate that. Abby Schachter is with us. She's the author of No Child Left Alone: Getting the Government Out of Parenting.